Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. Joining me this week is my very good friend, author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, it's a pleasure to be here today. I'm sorry about my late call, but I lost track of the time on this beautiful fall day in Northeast Ohio.
Right. And unfortunately, my good friend Bill Conrad can't be with us. I got a call from him a couple of hours ago, and he was barreling to the hospital. His mother has had a stroke.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. You know, I won't go into strokes because I know exactly what they are, and they're no fun.
No, so, a friend of mine just called me to say he thought he was suffering from very bad vertigo from the flu, and he called me. He just sent me a text message about 2 hours ago and said when he checked himself, he went to the hospital today. And he had a stroke. He didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he just had this was not recovering from the flu, and he had, vertigo. And he just had a stroke. He's in the hospital.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And these things happen. Anyway, you know, let's push on. It's been a great week. The DC PandaCam is back on. The Park Service can now stop Boy Scout leaders from creating havoc in national parks. And the Cruisinator got a hero's welcome in his home state of Texas. What a week. I mean, Where would you like to start?
where would I like to start? I think we should start with the cave by the establishment Republican Party. The cave-in of Boehner, the Republican senators who are led by Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. The cave of the Republican leadership.
But did they have any option other than to cave in?
Yes. Well, but you know what? See, the problem began is when they, as you so aptly put it, before anybody else did, Cruz controlled against it on Obamacare, they were doomed to lose because Obamacare is the law of the land, of, as we said on the show so many times. Where they caved is they should have gave up on Obamacare, said, hey, it's going to be the law of the land, and let people go after and went after the debt and made the debt the big thing. But they didn't. And they all, and you know, and as you all know, and I'm sure a lot of people listening in the audience know, there was a lot of little pork in that bill on Tuesday night, wasn't there, Simon?
Oh, just a little bit. Although, you know, at least it didn't include a bridge to nowhere.
No, but it's a dam in Kentucky. A $3 billion dam in Kentucky that also helped John Boehner. That was the McConnell. And my favorite one was the one-year salary for Frank Lautenberg's widow, who happened to be one of the wealthiest guys in the Senate.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Right. But that's the problem what Americans don't get. And, of course, is that all these bills are sprinkled with pork. And that's how they get – I mean, what did John McCain and Lindsey Graham get out of it? We must be going to war to Syria. I mean, because to get – and so I really think that's where the Republican Tea Party has to make a total radical change in their policy, which is to stop going after Obamacare and focus on the pork spending – and the debt ceiling, the debt. And I really think that will resonate with people. And obviously, something's wrong with Washington, not just the Republican Party. CNN, a.k.a. the Clinton News Network, also put a poll out this week that showed Republicans are blamed for 60% of the problems, Democrats 59%, and Obama a whopping 58%. Majority of Americans are fed up. And I know, how is that going to shake down in this next election in 2014 remains to be seen. But who's going to carry the banner? Democrats. You know, we kept the parks open. I mean, it's folly. And we're going to be there in 87 days, aren't we? Is it 87 days away?
Absolutely. Right.
What's going to happen? What have we learned? I mean, Simon, for anybody to think that we were going to default. I mean, I think Obama and Jack Lew and all those people, Pelosi, they were public enemy number one to me is Harry Reid right now, lied. With no way we were going to default. They were going to pay the debt first. What happened after that was going to be crazy, because then they had to decide who was going to get paid or what was going to get paid with the cash on hand. And that meant welfare checks were going to probably get cut. There wouldn't be EBT cards made available for people to go squander at Walmart, right? and things of that nature. And they didn't want to do that. The Republican establishment didn't want to do that. And Ted Cruz was a knucklehead, in my opinion, for making Obamacare to me it was a windmill. He was Don Quixote. Yeah, but he was right about the debt and stopping it. But if he really, really, really wanted to bring Americans into reality, he would have filibustered that, not Obamacare 2 weeks ago, that vote Tuesday night for as long as he could, and the focus on the debt, and put up a big credit card bill that said amount due, $17 trillion, amount owed, $17 trillion, minimum payment due, $20 billion. And if you continue to make the minimum payment of $20 billion, this debt will be paid off in the year $400 million. AD. Okay. I think that's what he should have done. But he keeps harping on Obamacare, and I think Obamacare is going to shoot itself in its foot as people learn they're not getting free health care.
Right. I watched the news today. I love Sundays. Yeah, the Sundays are the days that all of the politicians go out there and play with the media, and I didn't hear a single Republican say that they supported Cruz. I mean,
who were the Republicans they had?
McCain.
Oh, McCain. I don't support John McCain anymore. I think he needs, just the guy who wants to go to war. So that's my big thing with John McCain, this guy just can't wait.
McCain loves a good war because that generates, huge amounts of money, for the war economy.
Right.
But
which obviously owns him,
right. But when even McCain says Cruz is an idiot, you have to take a step back and go, whoa, there's a problem here.
Yeah, we know about what Frank Lautenberg got. We know about what Boehner and McConnell got with the bridge, the dam, and the Kentucky River. What are all these? What, there were 18 senators who voted against it. There's 43 U.S. senators, so 25 Republican senators. 25 Republican senators voted for it. What did they get in those 20 pages 25. You know, what would the pork take at? And that's what I think Americans have to start asking themselves. And the funny thing is, Boehner only won with Democrats, didn't he? House leadership. Excuse me. House leadership with Democrats, right? The rest of the Republicans right. voted against it.
Well,
so I guess. You know.
Yeah. The Republicans need to get their act together, that they need to get their camp together. Right now, that they're not one single party. There's the Cruisinators, and there's the regular folks. And I'll tell you what, this isn't boding well for the next election cycle.
Do you really think that people are going to remember in December, a year from now, what happened? I mean, who knows what crisis could come up? What if Benghazi wears its ugly head again and some truth comes out about that? Then that will dominate. You know what I mean? I mean, I think if Obama is getting blamed by 59% of the people on the CNN poll, and they even let that out there, that means Americans have blamed everybody. Rightfully so. We're all at fault. We agree with that, right?
Right.
Both Republicans and Democrats are at fault. They don't want to solve the problem. They want to continue to grow government. They continue to have programs that don't work, continue to be incompetent, continue to do all this stuff, continue to hold American people hostage. So what party is going to win? Whichever party comes up with the best solutions. And what are the best solutions? That's the question.
Okay, you mentioned Benghazi, and that is going to blow up a week from today. I can't say much about it other than to offer people advice. But 60 Minutes might be an interesting program to watch.
And what do you? What are we going to hear? What do you think?
I honestly cannot share much information because. I haven't had much information shared to me. But
okay, well, if you could predict what do you think is going to happen, pretend you predict what do you think is going to be. Because you're more familiar with that than I am.
I don't think it's going to be political. All right? I much more suspect that it's going to be about our state of readiness and our ability to, draw in information. And, you know, we've got Snowden out there, that's releasing all sorts of wonderful stuff that the NSA absolutely hate.
Right.
But, you know, what are these people actually doing that's useful?
spending a lot of our money. That's what they're doing.
Right.
They're spending a lot of our money. I mean, I don't even know what their budget is, but they seem to be engulfing and devouring everything that electronically eavesdropping on all of us. But for what reason?
Right.
I mean, what porn I'm looking at? What emails I'm sending out to you? What stuff I'm posting on Facebook? What are they doing it for?
Well, in all likelihood. They'll be able to publish the, first review of your book that isn't quite ready for publication.
Right. I mean, think of all the stuff they're doing. The question is why? you know, why are they spying on all of us?
Well, I think you have to go back to 2001. I mean, this is, you know, really where it all came to a head, shall we say.
Okay.
You know, sure, you can go further back, but it really was 2001 and the Patriot Act.
Right.
You know, Orwell had it right. He just didn't have the date exact.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I hate to fly. I used to really enjoy the idea of get on a plane, go somewhere new and exciting. These days I go, oh, fuck. Gonna have to take my shoes off, gonna have to take my belt off. Yeah, some ugly guy's probably going to want to fill up my junk.
A very ugly guy.
Right. I mean, is this really what people want?
I don't know. I don't fly that much. So, you know, my wife does. She flies more than I do, and she just flies from Pittsburgh to New York to visit her daughter and, you know, and grandkids. So, but, you know, it's a pain.
Right, but
she's used to it.
I mean, she doesn't want her junk, you know.
No, she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to be free. But I'm sure for people, you know, who fly, I think either now they're like, they're used to it. If they fly a lot, I think they're bothered by it. It's a pain in the ass. But I don't like about it personally is, why is the government providing security for the airlines? Why not provide security for me at my bar? You know why aren't the airlines doing that themselves? You know what I mean? That's what irks me. Why do we have to provide? Why is the United States government providing security for the airline, but and the airlines are not themselves? I don't understand that, you know. Why do we have to have a U.S. marshal on the plane? You know, like, look, in Israel, the state of Israel owns LAL, so of course they're going to have, they own it, so they can, they, you know, the taxpayers own it, so they're entitled to have a military, undercover military people or police officers on it. They own it. I don't get it. Are you getting a royalty check from American Airlines? I'm not. You know, why are we providing them with the security? And I think we just, why? Because it's another government welfare, and that's what I'm against, and that's what Ted Cruz and the 18, that's what, well, not Ted Cruz, my, that's what the person I was, want to be president, Rand Paul, is against. Why is government picking friends and making enemies with corporations? He's against TSA because TSA should privately, the government, the airline should provide for it, or the airports. After all, the taxpayers are generously with their tax dollars to pay for these airports, right? And then the airport then charge a fee to the airlines, right? To park their things there, right? They also collect revenue. Taxpayers don't get a kickback. They don't get a royalty check at the end of the month. Hey, the Cleveland Airport, there's $500 million in the black this year. Everybody who paid taxes in the Cleveland, here's your $1,500 rebate check. We don't get that, but we are, you know, the taxpayers are the shareholders of this giant. I don't consider it a government anymore. I was emailing with our friend Manny, and I said, you know, he sent me this book. And I finally dawned on me that we are not a government anymore. We are a giant megalopolis company called U.S. Inc. And some people and the shareholders are very few. They the beneficiaries of it. The rest of us are all just, you know, we're there. And more and more people are becoming, as this giant corporation called U.S. Inc. grows, it has to have people dependent on it to keep feeding it because it needs, you know, and whatnot. So what happens is, who are some of the people who feed on it? Well, I used to have a lot of faith that big business, big wealthy individuals would be the fine line between total statism and, you know, and democracy. Well, they joined the other side. The Walmart, my number one example is Walmart. Where do people don't get food stamps anymore. They get a credit card, don't they, Simon? And they take that credit card, and where do they go shopping at it? Walmart. So Walmart loves food stamps. Walmart loves it. So they, so they're a big sponsor of statism. The airlines, as we just talked about with TSA, they love big government because they're not even paying for security. And the taxpayer, who else loves them? Big sports. We pay for, the taxpayers pay for the stadium. The stadium is for billionaires and millionaire players. Taxpayers don't get a feedback. As a matter of fact, the taxpayers have to continue to pay the absorbent ticket prices to go support these guys even more. And by, you know, and the height of this whole thing is, did you hear about the NFL football player who's going stock? Adrian Foster,
yes.
Now you can buy a piece of him on Wall Street. If that's not definition of insanity, I don't know what else is. The world has gone, you know, stop the world. I want to get off. and we're all victims of it.
Okay.
And,
let's take these, you know, in piece by piece.
Okay.
You have some great points to make. In fact, let's start at the end. You know, I can't remember the gentleman's name. Young man, big man, plays football, which is great. I mean, how can you possibly, you know, list him on the stock exchange?
They did. I don't know how. His name's Adrian Foster. He's a running back, I think, for the Houston Texans. And I think it's, you know, I think his salary, he probably makes, let's say he makes $10 million a year. I guess he's a pretty good running back. So they take him public. So Simon and Sam buy a share of him at $100. And I guess they have to share, you know, I guess his dividends are going to rise and fall based upon what his contract is. If his team goes to the playoffs, he makes extra money. His, oh, boy, what is it called? What do they do? They do commercials. They do endorsements.
Yeah, so
he picks up an endorsement deal for Nike, and now he's making $50 million a year, and our stock just tripled because we bought it at $10, and now he's got a big endorsement thing. I guess that's the only thing that could be done, unless Adrian Foster also then becomes, he uses his income from being a football player, and he buys 50 McDonald's franchises through the stock, and maybe that's what it is too. I don't know. I just find it so laughable, because what happens if Adrian Foster gets conked in the head a couple of times and his career is over? Your stock's worthless, right?
Right, yeah.
But do you remember, it reminded me, we were talking about this with a friend of mine Friday night. Do you remember Viaticals, the scam that was coming in the late, at the height of the AIDS scare, in the 87, probably the 80s and early 90s? Remember what a Viatical was?
No.
Okay, you'll love this one, Simon. Viaticals were, you were dying of, the first people who got suckered into it were the people dying of AIDS who had life insurance policies. They had current life insurance policies. Let's say, and the life insurance policy was $100,000. They were dying. Investor A would come in and say,
"Sam, you're dying of AIDS." I don't want to interrupt you, but the official term is vulture capital.
Okay, vulture capital. Okay, would come into the patient dying of AIDS and say, hey, your policy's worth $100,000. Now, you're dying, right? You're dying. You're going to be dead in 30 days. Okay, I'll give you $30,000 right now, cash. Wave the money in front of the dude's nose. You sign over the policy to me. Here's a quickie thing my lawyers worked up. What do you care? You're going to be dead, but now you have $30,000 to go buy your boyfriend something, your mom something, go to Paris, whatever. People signed up like crazy on them. And those guys cleaned up. Those bandits cleaned up on people's death and misery and all that stuff, And to me, that's what this reminded me of. And I know it's a different thing, but to me, it's similar. Here's this guy who's going to put himself on stock, and he's going to go there, and you're going to buy stock. How many stupid kids who follow sports? He's from Houston. How many Houston high school kids who maybe have got $500 from the Christmas party? I love this guy. He's the best running back in the world. I got to have because they want to have a piece of stock that says, congratulations, little Johnny. You now own one share of Adrian Foster, Inc. You paid $50 for it.
Right.
And they're all excited. To them, it's like a baseball. Like we collected baseball cards, they'll collect that. And they're like, hey, I own some of this. And it's a unique scam, and it's terrible. Who should be surprised? I love the fact that J.P. Morgan has been, because of they bought Bank of America during the, they were forced to take over Bank of America, now to pay a $13 billion fine, which for J.P. Morgan is a drop in the bucket. Bank of America was illegally, they all were lying about these loans. But no one who got screwed, the homeowners who got suckered into these deals and or were then evicted illegally or foreclosed on have never seen one penny of this. And I blame the Obama administration, the Bush administration for looking. Well, it all started with the Clinton administration, but the Clinton and Bush administration allowed the easy money to go. The Obama administration, it collapsed under them. They were the ones who had to get the dustpan and the broom out to clean it up, and then just put people behind bars, and made these banks and loan servicing companies, some of these guys and Wall Street should have went to jail. It should have been, and the people who were screwed out of their homes either should have gotten their homes back and or money compensated, and they got nothing. What they did is they didn't put anybody behind bars, and anybody who did illegal activity such as robo signing, forcing it to happen, nothing happened to them, and they all paid a fine. The fine went to the Treasury Department. The Treasury Department divvied up $10 million to each state, and it went to the state's general fund to prop up the states, and that is a disgrace. And Obama could have done something, and that's one thing I hold against him. That this guy, should have really came down on and fixed that mortgage thing up, because it was a beautiful opportunity for this guy to set a course that, hey, new sheriff in town, you don't do this to people. Here's what's going to happen to you. And he didn't. You know what he did? He covered for them. He was the getaway driver. Bush started the car, and Obama got behind the wheel.
Okay, but. Here's the big question. Should we just have let GM, the banks fail?
I believe so. And here's why I say that. First of all, it wasn't all the banks. It wasn't all of Wall Street. It was like Bank of America, Lehman Brothers, General Motors, Chrysler. There was a couple other. There was someone else who, a bunch of other, Bear Stearns, right? They're out of business too. They were bought up.
Yep.
Okay. Right. And then I'll give you a great example. I used to bank at a place called, it's now PNC. It was called something else. I can't remember the name of the damn bank. PNC bought my bank was failing. PNC from Pittsburgh came in and bought it up. Society, it was called Society or something like that. They were a big bank. They were a big regional bank. They were in big trouble. PNC wasn't in big trouble. PNC came in and bought the bank out. PNC's doing great now. You know what I mean? There were banks out there that weren't playing this game. and bought up the stuff that they wanted to, you know, and what have you. So I think, like, for instance, Goldman Sachs, who I hate, might have bought up their Stearns. Or actually, I think Goldman Sachs would have fallen. Oh, AIG was the other one that was bailed out, right? Yes.
Right.
All the, like, companies that were doing good, you know, maybe Charles Schwab would have ended up buying up Goldman Sachs because Charles Schwab played by the rules. I don't know, right? We don't know that. Maybe Ford would have bought General Motors. Maybe Toyota would have bought Chrysler. They definitely would have bought aspects of them. And I'm going to tell you something else. And the small bondholders, the little guys who own stock in General Motors who got screwed wouldn't have been screwed. Because what people don't realize is General Motors, under Obama, General Motors, it was old General Motors had all the debt, all the bad stuff. They went bankrupt. The new GM didn't. So new GM started fresh anew with our $80 billion cash influx from the U.S. Treasury, but with no debt. Well, I mean, sorry, no outstanding bills. The old GM screwed everybody. Now, I didn't think they paid off anything. And that was the wrong thing to do. That was, I can't believe that. That's when the Supreme Court upheld that, too. That's when I knew Obamacare was going to pass. That's when you know that the Supreme Court's in on the fix. when they supported that bankruptcy of General Motors and the buyouts of Wall Street and AIG and all that. And there's a great book out there if anybody wants to read it or listen to the audio book. It's by Neil Barofsky. He was the inspector. He was a Democrat. He worked for Rudy Giuliani in New York City in the federal government down there. He was tapped by George Bush as the Inspector General of TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program, and he was fired by Obama. I mean, he was a Democrat because he asked the tough questions. He believed that Main Street should have been bailed out and not Wall Street. He won't take a lot of people to jail. He's on the unemployment line now. I learned a lot about his book. That's why I learned I can pop this stuff off because this guy investigated all of it. And of course, being the Inspector General, he had access to a lot of information. Also, people contacted his office with all the fraud that was going on. And how come, I'm a debt holder, to General Motors, they owe me my little company $80,000. I'm only getting $8,000. And, you know, how come I can't go after the new GM, which is really the old GM? And that's how he found out all this stuff. And he was just, it was just a shocking thing. So I think if we would have not bailed out everybody and things would have fallen today, 7 years later, the economy would be really, 5 years later, would be really robust. We would have less debt. We would have we would never have that stupid stimulus program either. That was a joke. And there'd be more jobs out there. The unemployment rate would be better. And we'd have real – Wall Street wouldn't be about manipulating money to make money, but Wall Street would go back to what it was supposed to be, find investors to actually make companies that grow jobs and whatnot. What do they do on Wall Street, Simon? Hocus pocus. They manipulate wealth, right? No one creates jobs on Wall Street anymore, right? They manipulate wealth. They manipulate trade money. You know, no one on Wall Street's out there thinking, we gotta start a company that does a better job at demolishing rotten houses that are falling down. You know, we got to do something. You know, and then take that material and turn it into a break wall on the ocean somewhere. You know, I don't know. I'm just brainstorming. But no one does that. What does Wall Street do? See, who can we fuck over? Which is the next guy we got to get in office at the Treasury? And I love the fact that Ben Bernanke is printing $94 billion a month to prop up our phony baloney empire.
Okay, that's actually a very good question. You know, where is this money coming from, and what is it doing?
Good question. Obviously, Well, according to Ron Paul, and who follows the Fed, and forgets more about the Fed than I'll ever know, they print it, and the Fed moves it around. They're putting interest rates at zero, and the banks go to the Fed and they buy and they borrow 90 and they buy up bonds, municipal bonds. They buy up the T bills. They the T bills that and they own some of the. I think the Fed owns most of the debt. It's not China, in America. And they buy up the debt, and they keep going. But they also buy up. They buy, when there's a bond offering. Well, a lot of people in America don't realize if Youngstown, Ohio, is floating a bond, Simon, the investor, doesn't come in and then write a check to the city of Youngstown. The whole bond thing is performed by who, Simon? Who does all the bond underwriting and the buying and selling of the bonds?
It wouldn't be Wall Street, would it?
Right. See, Americans don't think that. They think, the floating a bond to fix our roads in the state of Ohio. Oh, that's great. I'll just send my investors just send their checks down to Columbus, and they get a slip piece of paper in the mail that says, "Thank you for your $100 investment in the states of Ohio. Every month you'll be receiving a dividend checking from the state." No, it doesn't go that way. It all goes through Wall Street. So Wall Street loves the fact that the Fed is buying up all these bonds and whatnot because they're the ones floating the bonds. And so you have that, and that's where it's coming from, and they just follow the money. China buys up some of the debt. Wealthy individuals do. Other countries, pension plans are biggies, and they themselves are about to fall, right? There's the pension plan bubble out there because some people think our debt is $17 trillion. That $17 trillion is actual dollars that we owe. But the unfunded debt is somewhere up like $93 trillion. And I can't fathom that number. How do you pay back $1 trillion, let alone $93 trillion? And that's Social Security. That's the pensions of all these politicians, the 3 million workers, loans that the federal government's guaranteed, such as to General Motors, Wall Street, AIG, and all that. And do you really believe that these banks have paid back all their money?
No, personally, I don't.
I don't either.
I think we're being fed some. Some horse dewey.
I think, because if they were, like if you and I were the president and vice president of a bank that got bailed out, let's say we actually were going to pay the government back, we'd call a press conference, we'd have one of those giant blown-up checks behind us, right? Pay to your order as United States taxpayer, $100 billion, love, Simon, thank you from Simon and Sam, right? And we'd have a big press conference, and we'd show the big check, and of course, then we'd hand them a little check, and you'd make a great public relations crew out of it, wouldn't you? I haven't seen any of those. why would you do that? Look, that's what Lee Iacocca did, remember? He had the big blown-up check when he paid back the loans from Chrysler.
Right.
He made a big one. That was the right thing to do.
What bugs me is the whole, GM and bank deal. Right now, they're crowing. Oh, we paid it back with interest. Great. But, how did you manage to get into that position in the first place? No one ever seems to talk about that.
Right. We don't, do we?
No.
How we did is called credit derivatives. That's the way it is. So what else can we do? I think that they got in, and like I said, I always thought the Obama administration had a chance to really clean up the Wall Street and the banking industry. But when he picked Timmy Geithner, who was the head who helped get us into the mess, he was the head of the New York Fed. And came from Goldman Sachs. You go to Harvard, you go to Yale, You go to Goldman Sachs, you go to the United States Treasury, then you go back to Goldman Sachs. And that's the way it works. And that's what happened. And people don't realize that.
Okay. I'm going to go back to a question I asked before, but I really didn't ask it as a question. You know, what would have happened if we had let the banks and automakers, you know, fail?
What would have happened?
Yeah.
I think there would have been some short. You're talking to the federal government or to the up to the United States or what?
Yeah, the country in general.
I think there would have been some major short-term pain, but in the long time, things would have been okay. Because I think there were strong enough businesses to absorb to buy. Let's take General Motors, like I said. Let's say Toyota would have bought General Motors. I think more people would be working. And let's face it, United Auto Workers, what are they now? I think there's more United Auto Workers outside of America than there are actually in the United States of America. I'm pretty sure about that. Unions have, you know, and so that would have been it. So the unions would have been declawed. We probably had better vehicles. I think some plants would have been shut down for good. Probably needed to be. Probably still need to be. Cars would still be. The auto industry wouldn't have collapsed because even if it did, because if my bar goes out of business, I go out of business. No one's going to bail me out. That doesn't mean all the other bars are going to go out of business, right? If Chrysler and GM would have just went kaput, Ford would still be standing. Maybe even be stronger today. Maybe they would have bought some of those lines up and done anything and bought some of those plants up, and they'd be fine. They didn't get a bailout. Why didn't Ford need a bailout, Simon?
That is a great question. I don't think Ford asked for one.
No, they didn't need one.
Right. It was a situation where everyone was going, holy moly, here's a great way to get free money. Yeah.
I think because of that observation you just made, we saw the stimulus program, like, hey, wow, we did this for Wall Street, we did this for GM, let's do it for some more of our friends. And, of course, those friends were what? Unions, paving companies, the Philanders of the world, right? The green energy, all that sort of stuff. And they were all projects that were doomed to fail from the beginning, and they did fail. And the taxpayers ate $1 billion of that money, too.
Right.
And I think, you know, and because what happens is we've got, I think the word they use is crony capitalism. It should be, I don't think that's the right word. I think it's phony capitalism because the government's involved. I think it's got a United States government and all governments pick winners and losers based upon whose capitalist is the best, spends the most money, who's best being in that aspect. So, I mean, let's face it, the lobbyists are running the show. Worse today than ever. Corporate America, and I don't mean corporation itself, and I want the listening audience to understand what I mean. U.S. Inc., United States government, is the biggest monopoly in the world, and it's out there to get you. Not help you, get you. And we talked about it earlier. Why do we have an agency dedicated to spying on us? What did you do wrong? I didn't do anything wrong. What did I do wrong? Because I have an email account? Because I have a Facebook page? Because I write books? Because I dare speak for... I dare speak up against an oppressive government, a bad government. So am I a bad person? No, that's what this country was founded on. What do we do? Why do they want to control our lives?
That is a really great question. And, you know, I'm a big fan of books, and, you know, George Orwell's 1984 is one of my absolute favorite reads. And, you know, I grew up, you know, thinking good book couldn't happen. But that's exactly where we're headed. I think right now the TVs in our in our house mostly don't have cameras, but coming soon. I mean, it really bothers me. I guess
yep.
The good news. I guess the good news is that, you know, I'm 57, so I probably won't have to live through the next saga.
Oh, yeah, I like to think that, but I think we're in trouble. I think we're going to actually see we're going to actually see it. I used to think not, but we're actually going to see it. You know, it's going to happen. I think as Margaret, as the friend said, we're coming to that Margaret Thatcher stage where pretty soon we're going to run out of everybody's money. We're going to run out of other people's money.
Okay, well, let's go to the phone lines. We have someone from the 440 area code. What's your name, and what would you like to offer to us?
Wow, is that me?
Yep.
All right. Hi, my name's Dave, and I don't know what the format of the I know what the format of the show is, but not sure what you guys have been yapping about. Some derelict named Sam Moffey told me to call in and add my 2 cents. So I thought I'd bring 4 cents to see if anyone here has any common sense. So what's the topic? I'll be happy to chime in. And actually, Sam is a great guy. He's not a derelict, despite what anyone wants.
Simon, this is my good friend Dave Van Horn. He is a expert on civil rights. I don't want to say that. Civil rights is the wrong word, but he does know that, about individual rights in this corrupt government of ours. Has some great views on what citizens should be doing to protect themselves, how to fear the government, why to fear the government, and what they can do about it. And that's just part of his stuff. On top of that, he has a girlfriend who can make a damn good homemade pie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Life's too short to eat bad pie. So.
Right.
And by the way,
that's great. Are you starting point?
Hey, Simon, David has something to talk to me about. And you brought it up earlier, Simon, to shift gears. You're talking about Benghazi. Dave, why don't you talk about what you wanted to share with me earlier about Benghazi?
Okay, well, here's the thing. As a citizen, reasonably well-informed on something called the Constitution of the United States, I do not understand why the President of the United States and the former Secretary of State have not been, frankly, impeached. I think it should take about 10 minutes. And former Secretary of State and the President should be impeached and then incarcerated on their abuse of power. That's all in the public timeline. It's not like, this isn't a conspiracy theory or... this isn't Alex Jones or any of that kind of stuff. Those two went to the public and blamed innocent Americans for inciting the riot in a foreign country with a YouTube video. Now, there's so much wrong with that. that anybody who has just a modicum of knowledge of the Constitution should be outraged. And I don't understand why the press hasn't taken the guy down, nor the Congress hasn't taken the guy down. I think it should take about 5 minutes. That's an abuse of power. He should be tried for high crimes and misdemeanors. And why haven't we done it? So there's my thought.
Okay, so pretty much you're in the impeach Obama camp.
Well, I think there's legitimate grounds for impeaching Obama. I think there's a lot of things that, you know, are at the edges that he could be impeached for. But I mean, you guys are smart guys, so let me ask you the question. Point to me in American history, because I certainly can't think of an instance where the President of the United States and the Secretary of State blamed an incident in a foreign country on two completely innocent Americans. The one was Preacher Terry Jones, who candidly, I consider the guy a whack job. You know, he's a very fundamentalist preacher down in Florida, and he wanted to burn Korans. The other guy, I can't remember his name, but he posted the YouTube video, and they blamed the YouTube video for inciting the riot that led to the deaths of Ambassador Chris Stevens and the other three individuals, and, of course, the riot on the consulate in Benghazi. So having said that, name me an instance in the United States when we and then they took this whole thing out into the public timeline, and they tried to tell us that this heinous video was inflamed the sensibilities of these, I'm going to call them hypersensitive Islamofascists, into causing this riot. And under oath, Mrs. Clinton and everybody else was shown that they absolutely knew real time that this video had nothing to do with it, wasn't a factor, it was pre-planned, et cetera, and so on. So why aren't we taking this guy out of the White House in handcuffs along with Mrs. Clinton for high crimes and misdemeanors? I don't get it.
Okay, I mean, I love it, but I see some holes in the theory.
What hole is that?
Right.
Hang on. What is the hole? Since when can the executive office and the most senior official in the United States publicly pick out two innocent Americans, completely innocent Americans, and blame them for one? Let's walk this back. You can't blame an American citizen for inciting a riot with a YouTube video in another country. Okay, so there's no hole in that one. All right. The other part of that is, I don't know, did somebody crunch an ice back in there? The other part of that is Terry Jones, a preacher, was initially brought into this thing because he was accused of distributing this particular video to his flock in Florida. Okay? So there's no hole in that argument either. So I'm real interested how you want to back out of that one.
No. Well, let's talk about Terry Jones.
No. You don't get to deflect. This is about Barack Obama, and this is about Hillary Clinton. Terry Jones has nothing to do with this. They are innocent Americans.
You just ranted for 5 minutes about Terry Jones.
Well, I know. It doesn't matter. My point is, I had to give you background. Okay. So there's the background. So there's no hole anywhere. Or actually, now, why don't you tell me what you think is a hole in our president and secretary of state abusing the power of their office and indicting innocent Americans?
Well, I would rather establish the point that you're trying to make. And
no, I
so
made the point.
Where does Terry Jones and his theory on burning the Quran have anything
sorry.
To
Excuse
do
me.
With it?
I'm sorry, sir. In matters of debate, what you're doing is something called deflection, okay? So I'm not going to let you deflect. I want you to come back to the to my stated position.
Whoa. Hold on. You're the one that brought the subject up.
Terry Jones has nothing to do in this other than the fact that he is an innocent American citizen. His rights and the other guy's rights were violated. They were abused, okay? They were made instantaneous celebrities, global celebrities, for no reason by this administration, so that the administration could attempt to cover up a massive screw-up in Benghazi. I'm not even going after the fact that...
Okay, Sam... Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I understand exactly. I know David, so I know exactly where he's coming from, and I'm glad he called in because he brings up some very good points.
He's still called in, but
He's got David has some great points. He's a sharp guy, and I think Simon, no one more than you likes people with opposing points of view, right?
Right.
That's what makes good theater. That's what makes good radio. That's what makes good life. That's what makes America. That's what makes our show great, because when all of us are on, and we're missing a couple of people today, and we get callers, we're a very diverse group of people, men with ideas that some are good, some are bad, and some are shitty. But I think David brings up a great point that the Obama administration did deflect, in order to cover up their own shenanigans, they blamed these two guys, you know, come on. Everyone back then knew it was a joke. However, but Obama and Hillary, because it's, the Obamas and the Clintons can do no wrong in our with our media, mainstream media, whatnot, get away with it, and it cost Americans lives, and it was a cover-up. To me, it was no different than Nixon ordered a cover-up of Watergate. The American press did a great job at exposing that, so did the Congress in having the hearings and all that sort of stuff, and rightfully so, Nixon had to resign because they were going to impeach him for high crimes and misdemeanors. Is this the same sort of thing? No, but it is. There was a blatant cover-up by this administration to blame others, to deflect and whatnot, because they effed up, and it cost Americans their lives, it cost us our prestige, it did all this stuff, and nothing happened to them because the media is not what it's supposed to be. They're repeaters. Look, Fox News loves George Bush and the neocons. They repeat everything those people say. CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, they love it. They love the left. They repeat everything they have to say. As a matter of fact, they shouldn't be the media. They should just be the mouthpiece for the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, or the Obama administration. There's no fourth estate anymore, except in the internet, except on radio shows like this, except on that. And that's why the time to shut. And now, Simon, to answer your great question, now we know why the NSA wants to shut us down, because they can't control what goes on the internet. They cannot control your radio show. They cannot control what we write each other and email each other. Now, as far as impeachment goes, David, I think you should have resigned. I don't think you should put Americans through all that stuff, because they got class. But who's going to resign? First of all, the Republicans, because they stepped up the impeachment over Bill Clinton getting blowjobs, are never going to impeach somebody ever again. Never. Because they have no backbone.
Hey, but what's wrong with a BJ in the in the Oval Office?
I don't think there was anything wrong with that. I thought the Republicans were like total jackasses when they did that. And you know look what's happened since then. You go back to the Monday morning quarterback and it's football season. Bill Clinton makes $300,000 a speech. His family, his wife may or may not be the first female president. He has become the darling of the Democratic Party. He went into office with a negative net worth. He's now worth $55 million, probably more. That blowjob's been very, very, very good to him. Who does it hurt? Newt Gingrich is lousy on television, was a lousy presidential candidate. He ended up getting booted as Speaker. Monica Lewinsky lasted one day, 15 seconds of fame over. And everybody else, right? So they won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So I think, David, to answer your question, I think Republicans in Congress, and we just saw this over this debate, and they all caved in on Tuesdays, what Simon and I were talking about earlier, is they're not going to do anything unless it's a sure thing. And even then, I'm not so sure they're going to do it.
Well, that's my point. This is a sure thing. This is out in the public timeline.
I think, you know, Dave, Simon,
there's no denying it whatsoever.
Simon said there's something coming on that you and I and others will probably be very interested to watch. Simon, I forget, when did you say that was on, coming up on 60 Minutes?
Benghazi.
Right, it's coming up in a couple of weeks, or it's not tonight on TV, is it?
No.
It's in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But it's going to blow people away with what the revelations are going to happen. And maybe David, the situation is that those Republicans in Congress who have the right to impeach under the Constitution don't feel they're on shaky ground. You and I don't think we know they're not, but you and I are Congress people. So the Congress, what are they worried about? You know, come on, we just thought it's over the debate, over the debt ceiling, the debate. I mean, Simon said he was watching the talking heads today on the shows, and all the Republicans are screaming about how much they hate Ted Cruz now. Okay, and you know, here's a guy who goes to Washington. He was in Houston. Where was he? In Texas somewhere over the weekend, and they treated him like a conquering hero. In Texas, they love him. Because everyone forgets he's Hispanic.
I think there's a sea change coming for on the right in terms of. In terms of electoral or in terms of voters, as Obamacare kicks in and people see what a real lie it is, and then it's doubled down with the fact that the government's about to hold a gun to your head in order to pay this I think that'll start to create a lot of, I'm just going to call them conservative voters, not necessarily Republicans. Also, every 27-year-old now has a bullseye on them because they're now, quote, they might as well have been drafted. You know, it's now your duty to sign up and get health care and pay for this mess. So as the 27-year-olds start to, feel the ham-fisted smackdown from the federal government on this, I think we'll start to see some blowback. And then within the Republican Party, guys like McCain, even Boehner, Lindsey Graham, et cetera, they're clueless. So hopefully there'll be a sea change out there. That's all I can that's all I can hope for. And we'll get some people in there that'll repeal Obamacare and then go do some good work for universal health care. There's nothing wrong with universal health care. It's just the way it's being administered. We could have done the same thing Medicare.
David, tell me the solution. How can you fix it?
Sure. It's absolutely easy. For one, Medicaid, we already have all this stuff in place, which is Medicaid and Medicare. And the big gripe with everyone is, oh, we have all of these uninsured people who walk into emergency rooms and bring up the cost of medical care for every one of us because they get high priced. You know, they basically, when they go to the hospital, they're taking on the highest priced service. Okay, well, then that's fine and dandy. Then it would certainly be cheaper to just simply go out and say, okay, look, we're going to implement preventative care clinics throughout the United States for people of low income. And people of low income can go in and get all of these early preventative tests, you know, make it means tested, and pick up all of these tests, and let's deal with it that way, as opposed to an onerous law that, quite frankly, violates the Tenth Amendment. You can easily solve it
okay.
that way. Here's another way to solve it.
All right.
I give you a couple more.
I love what you're saying, but you're not really getting to the crux of the matter.
Okay, what's your crux?
All right, so your theory is anyone that has some kind of medical insurance should be excluded, and you know it's only the poor folks that need to get medical aid. Am I correct?
Well, this is a multi-layer issue. So, here's a couple of things. Hang on, we're going through a toll booth here, and I have to pick up a ticket. We already have a system in place that's working, and generally provides the best health care in the world, okay? And Obamacare certainly does not, doesn't fix anything. Obamacare doesn't do anything for preventative medicine. That's the first thing it doesn't do. All it's doing is basically providing catastrophic insurance for anybody who's out there. So it's not fixing the problem. Which is understand what the problem is early, diagnose it, and take care of it before it walks in as a heart attack. Okay, so that's the main crux of my argument. It's not solving any problems that we don't have today, and now it's just made it four times more expensive for everyone.
You're still not answering the question.
I'll answer it. What's your question?
All right. 60% of Americans have health insurance. And
yes.
Obamacare really doesn't bother those people.
Oh, yes, it does. Absolutely, it does.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we have a whole new class of worker now called the 29er. And those are the people who were basically working in low-wage positions, at fast food restaurants and, smaller employers, et cetera. And they were in businesses of 50 people or more, and those individuals got moved from a 40-hour week with benefits, limited benefits. You know, they didn't have a Cadillac plan by any stretch of the imagination. They got moved to 29 hours and no benefits, and then here's the kicker. Now they have to go out and pick up insurance, which is really costly on the individual market. It also impacted... and it's evident everywhere. I'm gonna cherry pick one, and I'm gonna note that I'm cherry picking one here. UPS went out, and because of the costliness of Obamacare and the way it's been mandated that an employer has to provide insurance, they went out and told all of their employees that their spouses are no longer covered. So those are direct instances of where Obamacare has come in and actually interfered with good corporate policy that's out there that helps Americans. And the administration is sitting there going, oh, no, that doesn't really happen. That's BS. It is happening. And it's happening in a big way out there. So they're going to get their comeuppance fairly quickly as Americans wake up and realize that they've been lied to, okay? It was, and again, here's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my entire life. And I fault the media for this. Well, your insurance is going to go down. This is Obama. Your insurance is going to go down by $2,500 as compared to what? What moronic jackass lets that statement alone? If I say to you, your car insurance is going to go down by $2,500, you're going to look at me and go, well, this as compared to what? So no one's asked these questions. Nobody put these people through the ringer. And that's what's, and to me, that is what is most frustrating.
Okay, David, what is the solution?
Okay, let me give you some areas where I think Obamacare has some valid...
It's easy to pick holes in anything.
I'm going to give you some merits, okay? There's some things that are merited out there in Obamacare that Americans want, all right? The first is something, and this is what people are going to like about Obamacare. The fact that, and the marketplace has to adjust to this. The fact of preconditioned or pre-existing conditions, okay, that's a horrible thing for many families. People who have something, they can't get insured for it, or the cost of that insurance is, you know, it's skyrocketing. Could the government do something about that potentially? You know what? I'm willing to look at that. But let's take that as a microcosm as opposed to a macro issue. That's like maybe 0.1% of the populace. So let's go look at that. Again, let's look at preventative health care access for low-income Americans. We can certainly set up, I'll tell you what, let's think about this. For $634 million, which is what that vaunted website at healthcare.gov supposedly cost us, you could create a hell of a lot of really good clinics where people could go in and pick up preventative health care. So those are the types of things that you know, if we just did some thinking, which they didn't, they just came down with a ham fist and said, this is what we're going to do. Another measure that is that's killing employers is it's easy for Obama to sit there and go, well, every woman should have birth control, okay? Well, no, they shouldn't. You know, if you want to have a war...
Come on, you're talking rubbish.
No, I'm not talking...
You know, what a woman wants to do is her personal choice. If she wants to use birth control, fine.
If she wants to get an abortion,
fine. But it's her choice. It's not yours. It's not Obama's. And it's no one's.
Well, that's my point. You just told me that I was full of rubbish. Actually, I would say we're probably in violent agreement. What Obama is saying is, okay, add the cost of every woman having birth control, having the cost of birth, the potential cost of birth control applied to her policy. All right. Now, I don't know if you're in business, okay, or if you've ever run a business, but that's
first. And so now what they're saying, you have to, by mandating that every woman has to have birth, has to have access.
Look, this is bullshit.
Absolute bullshit. It's been mandated.
No one ever said that Obamacare birth control, compulsory.
Absolutely. What do you think the revolt from the Catholic Church was? I'm going to move to Sam for a moment.
I like listening to you guys go at each other. It's nice.
The Catholic Church, and I'm not a big fan of the Catholic Church, okay?
And Sam, all right. I've put David in the timeout box. all right. Now, there's much about Obamacare that I personally don't care for, but this whole birth control thing is nonsense. You know, if a woman wants it, fine. If, you know, the abortion deal, if a woman wants it, fine. You know, who are we to, tell someone, a woman what she can and cannot do with her body?
Listen, it's the law of Roe versus Wade, the law of the land. I think a woman I think abortion is, I'm for it. Well, a woman's right to choose, whatever she wants to do. You know, they've made it the law of the land. People need to get away from it. But the law of the land for 40 years, enough. We need to focus on more important things like our debt and stop dealing with these red herrings and things of that nature. I'm all for national health care, but the way this has been done so far does not look good. I don't know. I'm waiting for my wife and I have already applied, as we're supposed to, and we're waiting to get responses back to see what it's going to be. On preliminary look-sees, it looks like we're going to get a pretty damn good plan from Obamacare, but we're waiting to see what we're going to get. It's better than what we have right now, and it's better than what's been offered by Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. But I still haven't received that. Just because when I looked online and said, your silver plan will be X, I have a funny feeling it's not going to come out that way. I hope I'm wrong, because I may be one of the lucky people. My wife and I may be one of the lucky people where Obamacare helps us. We don't know that yet. I'll be the first one to get on the – if it's a good thing for me, I'm going to be like – I'm going to say, wow, for once I'm finally getting something good with all the money I pay to government and at many different levels, because for the most of the time – I get diddly squat and have to bend over and grab my ankles when it comes to dealing with the government. And I anticipate that Obamacare is going to suck for me and my wife. I don't like the fact that what I really hate, and what I think David is trying to make the point of, is it's being shoved down our throats, and that the United States Constitution has been circumvented to say, hey, if you don't buy health care from the XYZ in this way, we're going to come after you to the IRS. I don't like that. I don't think people don't want to have health care. Just like a woman has the right to choose, people should have the right to choose not to opt out if they want to. If you don't want to have health care, that's your business. But you know what? If you get sick, don't come to us looking for money. Don't come to us. I mean, there has to be that sort of thing, but we don't have that. I hate the Obamacare because I listen to Ralph Nader, who one of the few people in America who actually read the 2,000-page thing. And what he said, he goes, once again, the American people, the consumers, the taxpayers, are paying for lobbyists in Washington who work for the insurance companies, and for the politicians to make their lives better and to screw us. There's nothing in there that's consumer-friendly. So, therefore, and that's a bad thing because they should have made it consumer-friendly. we should have national health care. A pre-existing condition, that's a terrible way for a society to act at any time. Oh, you've got a problem? Well, we're not going to help you. Well, you know, isn't that what we're in society for? Isn't that what we should be helping? Shouldn't we be trying to practice preventive medicine? Shouldn't we be rewarding people to live healthy lifestyles? If you join a gym, shouldn't you get a credit? Shouldn't you, you know, if you go eat 500 McDonald's Big Macs a year, you should be penalized for that. There should be a tax on McDonald's and all the fast food restaurants like there is on the cigarettes. And there should be a giant sign up there that says, warning, you keep eating this shit, you're going to clog up your arteries. But guess what? You're going to pay for it. I think you see a lot of people start to change their lifestyles around. And if but we don't. Because why? The lobbyists control this country. The Republican Party needs to, we talked about it earlier, Simon, how does it reinvent itself? Go after the debt, let Obamacare fall on its own because it's going to. Again, I'll be really shocked if my wife and I are going to qualify for a better plan as it's been laid out to us. We'll see. But the Republican Party needs to focus on two things. One, get this debt under control. And two, to focus on doing things to make people understand that they're responsible. That it's not Obama who's the enemy. It's a government of the corporation, for the corporation, and by the corporation. And that's the incestuous relationship of statism, what we have now. Corporations in bed with government, picking and choosing. And what I hate, Simon, and we talked about this with the bailout, you think about it. Ford Motor Company got screwed for running their company correctly, didn't they?
Absolutely.
They did. They ran their company correctly, and they got screwed. Charles Schwab didn't take part in credit derivatives. He ran his stock brokerage firm correctly. He got screwed. But we don't have that, right? What we bailed out all the wrong people. And rewarded them. How about the bonuses they got? And that's all because of the lobbyist, ex-politician. Who's one of the biggest healthcare lobbyists in the world, besides Clarence Thomas' wife?
Oh,
who's on the Supreme Court? Does everybody remember this name? Dom Daschle.
Monsanto.
Dom Daschle, one of the biggest architects of this, ex-majority leader from the Democratic Party, who taught Harry Reid everything he knows. And he made a fortune off this. He does that. And I'm sure there's some Republicans Clarence Thomas' wife, who all do that. The lobbyists win. They always win. And until the American, and that means the corporations win, whatever they represent do. The American people are getting diddly squat and taking it up the pooper scooper every day without Vaseline, and they don't realize it. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better because government, the NSA wants to control our lives. They want to put. Pretty soon, it's going to be a cop in every corner. I don't understand why people don't understand that. You already see it with a national blood alcohol level. When I was a boy growing up, every state had its own blood and alcohol level. But because now we all have the national, the federal government now dictates what the blood and alcohol level can be. In all the states, and it's going to drop down because there's a lot of money in it for everybody, not the taxpayers, not the citizens. You really want to stop drunk driving, put breathalyzer locks in, just like you did seatbelts. But that would not make, that would save people's lives but not make any money for the cops and the lawyers and the court system. And my brothers who got drunk driving wouldn't be able to spend oodles of money lobbying politicians. So that's what goes on, and that's just one of the problems. Why is Warren Buffett against Keystone Pipeline? Because his railroads, oil travels over his railroad. They won't do that on the Keystone Pipeline, so he has a vested interest in coming out against the Keystone Pipeline. Why was Microsoft and Facebook and all these other wonderful companies, why are they cooperating with the federal government and the NSA over what we're doing on the Internet? Obviously, they're getting something too, aren't they?
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
David, talk to us.
Sir. Oh, I'm just listening. I got it going around. you know, it, but what do you want to know?
I mean, what do we do, guys? I mean, do you want to really go down to what Ben Franklin said? When those who will give up liberty for the name of security have neither.
Right.
And it's really that simple. And that's what we've done under the Patriot Act, and we've made the local cop, the due process begins and ends with that local cop, whether it's blood alcohol level, whatever you want to say. They can show up at our door. I mean, pretty soon they will be showing up. But I mean, it really is. Simon, you talk about 1984. There's also some... there's also some family folks. There's Brave New World. There's Blade Runner. I mean, there's all those writers H.G. Wells too were geniuses at predicting what was going to go on, that the government was going to continue to grow, engulf, devour, and then want to control our lives in every aspect. It won't be happy until every single person is dependent on them.
And so much of this has the potential also to come true. If you think about it, every digital purchase that you make, I mean, for years, for decades, you know, it's all been about data mining. And, you know, what's on credit card purchases? What can we offer people that we know they'll already buy, et cetera? Well, what if you take that data and you twist it a little bit? And, you know, you start to look at, let's say, for instance, what someone buys at the grocery store versus how much should you charge them for health insurance, okay? In theory, the government has access now to complete that entire loop. So they can, and it's not beyond the stretch of imagination, especially if you understand what's sitting out there in Utah that the NSA is using, is to crunch all those numbers and say, gee, Sam went to the grocery store this week and he loaded up on double stuffed Oreos and he got 2 pounds of bologna, he got a bunch of cream cheese, and all of this kind of stuff. Well, you know what? Maybe we should edge his health insurance rates up because, you know, he's a high-risk eater type of thing. So, you know, this whole technological piece that's in place right now is pretty spooky. I mean, driving down the freeway here in Ohio, I absolutely know that there's such things as a stinger site. And what that means is, as I'm driving along and I'm going between cell tower to cell tower, there are certain cell towers that can reach into my phone and literally suck every piece of information that's inside this phone out, give it to the government so that they can analyze it. Whatever is in it, it's called a stinger site, they can look it up. So, you know, these are the types of apparatus that are out there right now that have not as yet been used against us. But
okay. I'm sorry, I have to break in. We need to wrap this up. David from wherever with you know, with the tin can and string. Next time you call in, try a real phone. You know,
hey, I've got the iPhone, so I'm just rolling down the highway. I'm doing the best I can.
Oh, you've got an iPhone. I mean, it sucks. Haven't you figured out that, you know, talking to someone on a cell phone never ever works? Yeah. And try the real way. You know, something that plugs in the wall.
You mean the landline that I don't have
happier.
Anymore? Okay. I don't have that landline anymore. So that went the way of the dinosaur.
Now you're coming in crystal clear. It's probably just
that's because I had you on speaker, because I honestly don't like putting a cell phone to my head because I'm irradiating myself.
You're irradiating yourself. my God.
Simon, let me tell you something. I develop handheld devices for a living, okay? Oh, gee. There is an extreme amount of energy that comes from both the cell tower and your phone, okay? Most of these devices are class FCC A or B. That's just, and they give off a tremendous amount of radiation. So
they
really
do indeed
deny that. And sticking
yep.
it up to your head is not a good idea over time. And just take it from somebody who's worked in the industry, that it's not a witch hunt out there. There really are some fairly significant health issues that we don't know enough about yet. So you literally are irradiating yourself when you strap these things up next to your brain. It's not good for you.
I absolutely agree with you. I use
okay.
a little plastic phone. I paid $3.
Yeah, don't do a Bluetooth either. It's the same thing. So
yep.
The best thing you can possibly do
this plugs in the
wire.
In the wall, and I'm good to go.
Okay.
All right. I do have to get the last word for Sam. Sam?
Well, I'm telling you, Simon, the Kansas City Chiefs won, so they're looking good. The Browns are getting their butts kicked by Green Bay, but David and I are used to stuff like that. I feel bad. If you guys agree about the cell phone, I'm in big trouble because being hard of hearing in my right ear, I can't listen to people on a speakerphone, nor can I speak into it because I can't hear it. So I'm going to die of brain cancer if my NSA agent Bob doesn't shoot me. If my NSA agent Bob doesn't shoot me first for my wanting to overthrow the United States government and install a constitutional republic, so I could be in big trouble. But anyway, I want to thank you, David, for calling in. You're a great guy.
My pleasure.
You added to the show. Simon, always a pleasure on Sunday. I look forward to it. It's the most fun I get during the week talking to world issues with you. Hopefully other people were listening to us and learned something. And if they didn't like what we had to say, well, tough shit. They can call in and argue with us. Have a great week, Simon.
Amen, brother.
Okay. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and healthy day. We'll be back next week. Till then, goodbye.
Peace out.